Welcome back to the Deep Dive, your essential shortcut to informed knowledge, where we cut through the noise and get straight to the findings that matter. Today, we are immersing ourselves in the really complex world of professional education. We're looking at an area that often gets dismissed as, you know, soft skills, but is in reality absolutely mission critical.
Emotional intelligence in teaching.
Exactly. We've got this fascinating mixed methods study in front of us. It's analyzing how you incorporate social emotional learning, or SEL, into online training programs.
Specifically for pre-service English language teaching teachers, or ELT teachers.
Right. And the big questions are, can you actually teach empathy and self-management through a computer screen? And maybe more importantly, does everyone even learn these skills in the same way?
The urgency here is just, it's huge.
It really can't be overstated. I mean, since 2020, education, and especially teacher prep, it's just undergone this radical, non-negotiable shift to digital.
And we know teachers need these deep emotional and relational skills to succeed.
To manage classroom stress, to connect with a whole range of diverse learners,
yeah.
To just stay resilient.
But if their training is happening entirely online, are they getting those skills?
Or are they just mastering methodology and, you know, grammar rules? That's really the core tension this research gets at.
And this study, it goes beyond just asking if online SEL training works. It introduces a really critical lens.
Gender.
It meticulously examines how male and female pre-service teachers engage with, and crucially, how they benefit from this integrated SEL curriculum.
So we're moving toward defining what a truly gender-responsive curriculum might even look like in a digital world.
Right. And our mission in this deep dive is to pull out the nuts and bolts of the study, understand the theory behind why it was so successful, and really wrestle with these surprising and practically significant gender differences that came out of it.
The initial findings are your immediate hook. You know?
Absolutely. Overall, SEL competence increased dramatically. I mean, a huge jump. But the way people learned, the mechanism, it was split.
That's right. The data showed this clear divergence in the kinds of skills people gained. And it's something program designers, well, they really can't afford to ignore it.
So you had female participants showing statistically higher gains in the relational skills.
Right, things like empathy and interpersonal communication.
And at the same time, the male participants showed this steeper progress in internal emotional control.
In self-regulation.
Exactly. And this isn't just, you know, academic trivia. The researchers actually quantified this. They showed that gender accounted for between 8 and 10% of the variance in those three key competencies.
8 to 10%. When you're designing a costly, intensive professional development program, a 10% difference in how effective it is because of one factor you didn't account for.
It's a massive failure of design. It really is.
So that's the gap we're exploring today. How do we close that 10% gap through tailored adaptation? Okay, so let's unpack the foundational concepts first. Before we even get to the results, we need a common, clear understanding of what social-emotional learning, or SEL, actually is.
All right. And the study uses the CASEL framework, which is really the gold standard.
The Collaborative for Academic, Social, and Emotional Learning. It defines SEL through five core interconnected competencies.
And we should probably walk through them, maybe thinking specifically about an ELT teacher trainee.
Good idea. So number one is self-awareness.
This is the bedrock. It's the ability to accurately see your own emotions, your thoughts, your values, and critically how they influence your behavior in the classroom.
So for an ELT teacher, this would mean
what?
Recognizing your own bias towards, say, a native English accent.
Exactly. Or knowing that your own personal anxiety about classroom silence is making you jump in too fast.
Robbing the learners of that processing time they need.
You've got it. If you don't know why you're reacting a certain way, you can't possibly change that reaction.
Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah.
And that builds directly into the second competency, which is self-regulation or self-management.
Right. This is your ability to manage those emotions, thoughts, and behaviors, especially in stressful situations.
In the ELT context, that could be managing the frustration when a student makes the same grammar mistake for the 10th time.
Or controlling the impulse to correct every single little error.
Or just keeping your cool when the tech fails during an online lesson.
Huh.
Which happens all the time.
All the time. It's stress management, impulse control, and perseverance all kind of rolled into one.
Okay, next up is social awareness.
This is a big one. It's about taking the perspective of others, empathizing, especially with people from different backgrounds and cultures.
And for an EL teacher, this is paramount, right? I mean, every language classroom is an intercultural space.
Absolutely. Social awareness means seeing when a student is hesitant, not because they don't know the answer, but maybe because their cultural background discourages direct confrontation or argumentation.
So you don't misread the situation.
Precisely. It's understanding a student's anxiety that might be coming from feeling judged because of their accent, and then adjusting your lesson on the fly to support them.
Okay, so that leads to relationship skills.
Which is really the external application of those first three. It's about building and maintaining those healthy, supportive relationships.
Communicating clearly, working with colleagues.
Navigating conflict constructively. In ELT, this is the skill that lets a teacher build real rapport. And that rapport is essential for creating that low anxiety, high trust environment you need for someone to take the risk of learning a new language.
If the students don't trust you, they're not going to risk speaking. It's that simple.
Exactly.
And the final one, responsible decision making.
So this is about making constructive choices, thinking about ethical standards, safety, what the consequences might be.
In teaching, this could be anything from grading bias to what? Knowing when to involve a school counselor if a student discloses something personal.
Yes, and how to do that without violating their trust. It's a very fine line.
And it's so important to emphasize, like this study does, that these five skills, they aren't just supplementary. They aren't just nice to haves.
No, they directly inform efficient teaching. They are the engines of a positive classroom atmosphere.
And they're the foundation of that professional resilience that helps a teacher just withstand the immense stress of the job.
And that resilience is particularly strained in the ELT context.
Why is that?
Because ELT demands so much more than just teaching grammar. It demands an exceptionally high level of intercultural sensitivity. Mm-hmm. You're navigating identity and culture every single time a student opens their mouth.
And if a teacher doesn't have that deep social awareness, that empathy,
they risk misinterpreting communication breakdowns, which can just derail a student's confidence in their progress instantly.
Right. And the very nature of language learning is just, it's anxiety inducing.
It is. ELT teachers need to have the significant emotional flexibility to cope with all that learner anxiety about speaking, about being judged.
So without strong SEL, a teacher either burns out from carrying all that emotional labor,
or they create a rigid, unproductive, and frankly, an unpleasant classroom.
Which leads right to the historical gap this study talks about.
Yeah. Traditional teacher training has been, you know, kind of obsessed with what's easily measurable. So it's overwhelmingly prioritized cognitive and pedagogical skills.
Did you master the methodology? Do you know your phonetics?
Right. And emotional competence was just pushed aside. It was seen as secondary or just something you either had or you didn't. This study is arguing very forcefully that it is both teachable and absolutely essential.
Okay, so now we take that historical problem and we put it into the modern context. Online training.
Which presents this massive hurdle.
On the challenge side, the online environment means you have an almost total lack of nonverbal cues.
Reduced immediacy. It's harder to build that interpersonal rapport because you can't see the whole person. You can't read the room in the same way.
And in language teaching, where you rely so heavily on those little subtleties, reading confusion on someone's face, or seeing that little spark of understanding.
Losing those cues is debilitating. It really is. The study stressed that course designers have to purposefully tackle these weakened social cues. If they don't, SEL will just atrophy in the online space.
But the study's whole intervention was built on the opportunities of the digital environment.
Exactly. If you do it right, it offers some really distinct advantages.
We're talking about things like structured reflective journaling tasks,
right?
Which allow for private, deep self-processing.
Something that's really hard to manage in a busy physical classroom. And you have asynchronous discussions.
Which force you to be more thoughtful and measured in your empathetic responses instead of just having a quick reactive exchange.
And you can use video-based exercises for perspective-taking practice. The key, as you said, is that the design has to be purposeful. It has to be intentional and scaffolded.
And that intentionality was all about addressing these three huge gaps the researchers saw in the existing literature.
First was the contextual gap. We've studied SEL a ton in face-to-face settings.
But its effective implementation in fully online professional programs is poorly understood, especially now, post-pandemic.
Then there's the disciplinary gap. We need more research on SEL that's specifically tailored to the unique emotional demands of ELT training.
Generic models for K-12 teachers just don't cut it when you're dealing with intercultural communication at this level.
And the third, and maybe the most urgent gap for our deep dive today.
The influence of gender.
The influence of gender on SEL development in these digital learning settings is, well, it's been empirically neglected. And if we don't understand how men and women engage and benefit differently, we risk rolling out training that just reinforces biases or gives subpar results for half the people taking it.
So to tackle these really complex, multi-layered gaps, the researchers used a very precise framework. Let's dig into the structure they chose.
They used a mixed methods, quasi-experimental design.
Okay, let's break that down. Quasi-experimental means what exactly?
It means they weren't randomly assigning participants, but they were applying an intervention, the SEL curriculum, and measuring the change with a pre-test, post-test structure. It lets them suggest causation pretty strongly, even without a perfectly controlled lab environment.
And mixing in the qualitative data just makes the results more robust.
Much more.
And what was the theoretical backing? Why did they think this intervention was going to work?
The main theoretical basis was transformative learning theory.
From Jack Mizzero.
That's the one. And this theory suggests that learning isn't just, you know, accumulating facts. It's a process of critically examining your own assumptions, your beliefs, your frames of reference.
And that leads to a dramatic shift in your perspective.
Right. So in the context of SEL, a teacher doesn't just learn the definition of empathy. They critically reflect on a past teaching failure where they misunderstood a student's cultural cue. That's the disorienting dilemma.
Okay.
And this reflection forces them to restructure their whole understanding of their role as a teacher. They transform from I teach English rules to I facilitate intercultural communication. And that critical shift is what drives the lasting change.
That's a really crucial point. So this wasn't just about checking off SEL boxes. The whole thing was designed to force a fundamental change in how these trainees saw their professional identity.
Exactly.
Okay, so let's talk about the participants. 60 pre-service ELT trainees.
And the sample was intentionally balanced. 30 identifying as male, 30 as female. Ages range from 22 to 30, with a mean of about 25 and a half.
And importantly, they were already academically qualified.
Yes, all of them had advanced English proficiency, C1 or higher. This was to make sure that any gains they measured weren't just because their English was getting better. These were professionals ready for advanced pedagogical training.
And the intervention itself, the heart of the study, was a 10-week online training program.
And this detail is really important. SEL wasn't a standalone unit. It was integrated systematically, week by week, weaving emotional competence into everything from lesson planning to assessment.
Let's talk about those activities. I mean, what did the trainees actually do for those 10 weeks?
They started with asynchronous educational videos.
But these weren't just boring lectures.
No, not at all. They were often case studies showing real-world classroom challenges where SEL skills were the key. So a video might show a teacher handling a microaggression in a peer editing session, and then they'd analyze the teacher's self-awareness or social awareness in that moment.
Okay. And then came the reflective journaling.
Yes, which was key for self-awareness and self-regulation, especially online where you don't have that immediate back and forth.
So a prompt might ask something like,
describe a recent interaction with a peer that caused you frustration. Analyze your emotional response. That's the self-awareness piece. And list three specific strategies you could have used to manage it more effectively. That's self-regulation. It forces analysis over just, you know, venting.
And the online discussion forums, those were the relational crucibles, right?
Absolutely. They fostered the practical application of empathy and communication. A typical scenario might present an intercultural misunderstanding, like a trainee misinterpreting a supervisor's direct feedback as being rude.
And then the trainees had to work together to problem solve.
Right, offering supportive feedback, demonstrating perspective taking, trying to resolve the conflict constructively.
And you mentioned before that the program intentionally embedded gender responsive activities.
Well, critically. Recognizing that emotional expression varies, the curriculum used case studies that showed diverse styles. For example, one task might involve analyzing the communication of a female teacher who uses a lot of emotional disclosure versus a male teacher who communicates in stark, task-focused language.
Validating both as potentially effective, depending on the context.
Exactly. Not saying one is better, just that they're different.
So this intentional scaffolding was their way of trying to neutralize those muted nonverbal cues of being online. They built the emotional cues right into the material.
You've got it. And finally, the instruments, how they collected the data. It was really robust, relying on triangulating three different sources.
Okay, so first was the quantitative backbone, the SEL competency survey.
Right. It was adapted from KSEL, but it was customized for ELT, and that adaptation was crucial. They rewrote scenarios to focus on language teaching specifics, like managing a classroom where students have wildly different levels of motivation.
And it was reliable.
Very reliable. High Cronbach's alpha. It measured all five domains.
And second, the qualitative evidence.
That came from the online discussion logs. The transcripts were meticulously content analyzed for markers of emotional insight, explicit demonstrations of peer support, and the specific strategies they used for conflict resolution.
So a behavioral measure of their relationship skills.
Pretty much. And third, they added the interpretive context through semi-structured interviews.
They spoke to a smaller stratified sample, 6 male, 6 female.
And that was to get those deep, rich reflections on their personal engagement, what they felt they gained, and how they perceived the gender dynamics of the online group. This let the participants explain the why behind all the numbers.
Okay, let's transition into the results. We're moving from the design to the actual data. And remember that first null hypothesis, age 01, that the training wouldn't significantly affect overall SEL competencies?
Well, the answer was a resounding rejection of that.
The program worked.
It worked, and it worked profoundly well. The improvement in the overall SEL score was huge. The cohort mean went from 3.18 on the pretest all the way up to 4.9 on the post-test.
And that wasn't just by chance.
No, the stats confirmed it. The p-value is less than 0.001.
But the real story here is in the magnitude of the change, right? The Cohen's D.
Yes. The Cohen's D paired effect size was 1.01. And for our audience, that number is highly descriptive. What does a Cohen's D of 1.01, a very large effect size, actually mean in practical terms?
It means the average trainee after the program scored higher than about 84% of the trainees before the program.
Exactly. Imagine a bell curve of competence. The average trainee was shifted an entire standard deviation to the right. This isn't just incremental learning. This is a transformative shift in the professional capability of the whole group.
So it proves that systematically integrating SEL online isn't just possible, it's highly efficient.
It does, which leads us to the critical turning point, the gender split. The second null hypothesis, H02, was also rejected.
So significant gender differences do exist in how these specific skills developed.
Yes, and this is where we need to slow down and really unpack the nuance. The analysis, which controlled for their baseline scores, showed that gender was responsible for a medium effect size. It accounted for that crucial 8 to 10% of the variance in outcomes for three key areas.
And that's not just statistical noise.
No, it represents different learning trajectories. It means the design needs to change.
Okay, before we break down the specific numbers, let me just jump in with a critical question here.
Yeah.
When you see a result, this polarized one group excelling at relational skills, the other at self-control, it sounds dangerously close to just confirming traditional, maybe even harmful gender stereotypes.
It does.
So did the researchers address how they made sure the curriculum wasn't just, you know, accidentally reinforcing those patterns?
That is the precise conversation that this paper provokes. The methodology tried to counter this by validating different expression styles, not saying one is better, just showing how the online environment favored different approaches. They acknowledged that, yes, prior socialization plays a role in how people engage.
So the findings don't suggest that men are incapable of empathy or women are incapable of self-regulation.
Not at all. Rather, the intervention as it was designed just happened to better leverage the existing strengths and engagement preferences of each group, which led to these polarized gains in certain areas. It's really an indictment of a one-size-fits-all design, not the potential of the learner.
That makes the data a really powerful tool for curriculum correction then. Let's look at the numbers for that split, starting with self-regulation.
Okay, so this is that internal skill of emotional control and monitoring. The gains for the male participants were substantially higher. They saw a gain of plus 1.28 points.
Whereas the female participants, while they still gained, only saw a gain of plus 0.73.
Right. And that difference was statistically significant, with gender explaining 9.7% of the variance.
So, to put a point on it, the men improved their internal control almost twice as much as the women did under the exact same structure.
Exactly. Now look at the relational inverse, starting with empathy.
This is perspective taking, social awareness.
Here, male participants gained plus 0.85. But the female participants, their growth was soaring, a massive gain of plus 1.42 points.
That difference was also significant, with gender explaining about 9% of the variance.
It was.
So if a teacher walks into a language classroom after this training, the male trainee, on average, has a significantly better capacity to regulate their own stress and impulse control.
While the female trainee has a significantly better capacity to read and respond to a student's emotional state.
And the pattern continues with interpersonal communication.
It does. Male gains here were plus 0.79. Female gains, again, substantially higher at plus 1.35. Another significant difference, explaining nearly 8% of the variance.
And those two skills, empathy and communication, they're just inextricably linked.
And both showed massive relational gains for the female cohort.
Let's just pause and think about the real-world consequence of 10% variance in these outcomes. If a male teacher fails to integrate relational skills effectively because of that lower empathy gain,
they might be great at managing their own stress, but they could fail to create an inclusive environment for a diverse student body, which could lead to student attrition or low trust.
And conversely, if a female teacher who excelled in the relational skills fails to fully integrate self-regulation,
she might connect beautifully with her students, but she could be more susceptible to emotional burnout or struggle to maintain strict professional boundaries when faced with challenging learner behaviors.
So the issue isn't that they gained the wrong skills.
No, the issue is that the standardized training did not optimize both skill sets equally for both groups.
And crucially, the data also show that the gains in self-awareness and responsible decision-making were basically the same for both genders.
Right, so those foundational cognitive and ethical skills were absorbed universally. But the application, whether it was internalized or externalized, that split along these gendered lines.
The quantitative data gave us this precise map of the polarization.
It did. The structured curriculum fostered internal control most efficiently for men and relational expression most efficiently for women. And that mandates a shift. We have to move from standardization to targeted adaptation. The question now is, why did this happen? And the qualitative data, the analysis of the interviews and the discussion logs, that's the decoder ring for the numbers. It gives us the experiential context for why the training produced these specific gains.
Which led to the rejection of the third null hypothesis, HO3. The trainees absolutely differed in how they perceived and engaged with the material.
Completely.
So let's look at the first theme, which ties directly back to those empathy and communication gains. Patterns of emotional expression online.
The qualitative reports just solidified this difference in online interaction styles. Female trainees consistently reported and demonstrated more frequent perspective taking. They were significantly more inclined toward emotional disclosure in the forums.
So they were using the space for explicit relational work.
Yes. Spending time affirming their peers, sharing their own anxieties about teaching, reflecting on the interpersonal dynamics of the group.
You'd see transcripts where a female trainee might write.
Something like, I am feeling overwhelmed by this feedback, but I understand where my peer is coming from, and I recognize they took the time to offer this support. That's actively practicing empathy and communication disclosure right there.
And what about the male trainees?
Their expression was described as more restrained and highly task-oriented. Now, they engaged enthusiastically, but their contributions often focused on finding the quickest path to a pedagogical solution.
Providing feedback that addressed performance metrics or seeking resources rather than relational support.
Exactly. They saw the forum as a tool for knowledge transfer and skill refinement, less so as a venue for shared emotional processing.
So the women's higher gains in empathy and communication weren't magic. It's because they chose to use the online forums to actively and repeatedly practice the very skills that were being measured.
They were exercising that relational muscle more frequently in the space they were given.
Which makes perfect sense. Okay, theme two, feedback responsiveness.
And this theme really explains the higher self-regulation gains among the men. Professional development is nothing without good feedback, and the groups craved very different types.
The female trainees valued what was called dialogic, effectively rich feedback. What does that mean in practical terms?
It means they needed the feedback to be embedded in a conversation, in a relationship. They valued the supportive wrapper, the peer affirmation, the conversational exchange, the encouraging tone, just as much as the criticism itself. For them, feedback was a mutual exchange that strengthened the teaching relationship.
They needed to feel seen and supported before they could implement the change.
You've got it. Conversely, the male trainees strongly emphasized concrete, stepwise feedback.
So they weren't focused on the emotional context of the delivery?
Not at all. They wanted specific, clear instructions that supported performance monitoring and self-regulation. Their response was basically, just tell me exactly what to change in step one, step two, and step three so I can integrate it and track my improvement.
And there's the profound connection back to the quantitative data.
There it is. Self-regulation is inherently linked to performance monitoring. The structured, performance-focused nature of the curriculum's tasks lent themselves well to producing that concrete, stepwise feedback,
which resonated perfectly with the male trainees' preferred learning strategy. And that optimized their gains in internal control.
It's a perfect illustration of how the same design yielded different results based purely on engagement preference.
And the final theme addressed the limitations of the platform itself: perceptions of gender dynamics online.
Yes. Both groups were keenly aware that the muted nonverbal cues in the digital setting made all that relational work much more difficult. They noted the difficulty of gauging sincerity or managing conflict or fully expressing empathy without that visual context.
So it sounds like the environment itself threatened to flatten the very emotional skills the training was trying to build.
It did. But the trainees confirmed that the intentional design, the structured prompts, the reflective journaling, the scaffolded discussions, all of that was crucial.
It acted as a kind of digital social scaffolding.
That's a great way to put it. It forced the expression of emotional intent and perspective taking that the platform would have naturally muted. And that was the mechanism for promoting more balanced and equitable participation, ensuring that even the trainees who were less inclined towards spontaneous emotional disclosure still had to engage in the process.
So we've established that SEO works online, but not uniformly. The next crucial step is defining the so what for professional practice, for instructional design, for policy. These findings, they really mandate direct, actionable changes.
They do. Let's start with curriculum design. The big implication is that SEL can't be treated as a side dish.
It has to be part of the main course.
Exactly. Program designers have to integrate SEL explicitly and systematically across every single module, from grammar to assessment. It needs to be established as a core competence of ELT professionalism.
Which means it can't just be relegated to a single introductory week.
No, it has to be woven into the entire 10-week syllabus, ensuring continuous practice and refinement.
And for overcoming that screen barrier, the online teaching strategies need some specific tuning.
To counter the lack of embodied cues, instructors have to lean heavily on tools like structured reflective journals and deliberate scaffolding to create what we call social presence.
This could mean having emotional check-ins at the start of every asynchronous discussion.
A great example, requiring trainees to explicitly state their current emotional context before they tackle a task, which helps prevent that professional detachment.
But the most significant implication here is the need for gender-responsive adaptation.
Without a doubt, a standardized, one-size-fits-all approach failed to maximize gains across the board. Training programs have to establish flexible participation opportunities that validate both the dialogic and the structured communication preferences.
Policymakers need to acknowledge that gender is a significant factor here and allocate resources accordingly.
Right.
So let's be really specific. If a program designer has this data in front of them, how do they tailor the approach to make sure both male and female trainees maximize their gains in all five competencies?
Okay, so for the female cohort, who excelled in relational skills and valued that biologic feedback,
the recommendation is to implement enhanced structured peer feedback sessions.
Yes, using collaborative online tools. Instead of relying on spontaneous discussion, you make these sessions mandatory, highly interactive, and you focus them on using empathetic language and perspective taking in their critique. You're doubling down on the skills they naturally leverage to help them grow even more.
And for the male trainees, who showed that tremendous gain in self-regulation and valued concrete feedback,
the focus has to shift to performance and structure. This means using interactive simulations with really clear performance rubrics.
So they might complete a little teaching microtask, like giving instructions for a difficult grammar point.
And the immediate feedback they get is structured around, did you manage your observable frustration? Did you stick to the time limit? Here are three clear steps to improve your self-monitoring in a high-stress scenario. You align the training with their preferred regulatory strategy.
So this is truly about optimizing learning styles. The goal isn't to teach less empathy to men or less self-regulation to women.
Not at all. It's about providing the specific structure each group needs to excel in the domain they struggled with most under the standardized model.
Okay. But we have to ground this discussion by addressing the critical limitations that the researchers themselves pointed out.
Yes, which encourages us all to think critically about the data we've just analyzed. First, the sample size was small.
Only 60 participants from one specific context, which limits how much you can generalize these really strong findings.
And as we noted, the binary gender definition means we lack insight into non-binary engagement or how other demographic factors might play in.
But the most important limitation for us to really dig into is the heavy reliance on self-report bias.
Yes. The entire quantitative outcome hinges on what trainees said they felt or learned in the surveys and interviews. And that introduces a serious risk of social desirability bias.
This bias is just rampant in emotional skills research, isn't it?
It is. If a trainee is in a program that's explicitly designed to make them more empathetic, they are highly likely to report that they're more empathetic on a survey.
Regardless of whether their actual classroom behavior has changed at all, they know what the program expects them to say.
And that inclination could fundamentally inflate the measured success. It could make the post-test scores look much better than the reality.
That's a huge caveat. If the true gains were inflated by, say, 10 or 15% because trainees were trying to please the researcher, it would diminish that spectacular Cohen's D of 1.01.
It would.
So what steps does future research need to take to move beyond this inherent psychological hurdle?
The research has to evolve toward more objective, observable measures. Instead of asking, how empathetic are you, future studies need to implement behavioral observations.
Where researchers are actually coding real-time interactions.
Right. How often does a trainee use perspective-taking language during a conflict? Or you could use performance-based assessments where the SEL skill is measured indirectly.
Maybe by tracking a teacher's heart rate variability during a stressful simulation as a proxy for self-regulation.
That's a fantastic example. Or tracking student retention as an outcome of the teacher's relational skills.
And finally, a shift to longitudinal designs.
Yes. If SEL competence is truly transformed, it should still be there 6 months after the course ends. It should be visible in their actual professional practice. We need studies that track these teachers into their first year of employment to see if those big gains in empathy actually held up against the realities of a demanding classroom. #outro.
So this deep dive really confirms that SEL isn't peripheral. It is the core framework for building competent, resilient, and inclusive online ELT educators.
But the key finding, the big takeaway, is that efficacy is not universal.
Right. Program designers have to move past these standardized one-size-fits-all curricula and really embrace gender-responsive adaptation.
Which means creating spaces that support that dialogic reflection for relational skill development, while also providing the concrete, structured feedback that's necessary to foster internal monitoring and self-regulation.
You have to meet the different engagement styles of your trainees to ensure everyone achieves maximum professional competence.
And the power of this research is that it gives program designers the empirical justification to stop debating if SEL should be taught online and start focusing on how to implement it with the necessary nuance and intentionality.
And by doing that, fixing that 8 to 10% variance in the outcome.
Exactly. Which leaves us with a final provocative thought tied to those limitations of self-report data. Given the monumental importance of emotional skills in teaching effectiveness, how can educational technology, which is designed for and optimized in these online environments, be leveraged not just to report on SEL gains through surveys, but to objectively observe, log, and measure the application of empathy, self-regulation, and perspective taking in real-time professional practice?
Can we create systems that move beyond what trainees say they gained?
And measure what they actually do.
Something to mull over as we all watch the evolution of the virtual classroom. We hope this deep dive has been informative and actionable for you.